You know, on this day, it is August 28th, as we do this show live, and I thought we really needed to hear some of the songs that drove the movement, the civil rights movement, on this historic day on which a statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is unveiled at the state capitol. People Get Ready, one of those songs that really was part of what the movement was all about. And we'll hear a couple more songs that were important in the civil rights movement as well. We have a full house today, and for good reason. There's so much to unpack as we talk about this historic moment. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer of the AJC, is here. Theron Johnson, Democratic political strategist and also the founder of Paramount Consulting, his political consulting. And I think you do more than political. You do work with corporate partners, that sort of thing, too, don't you, Theron?
Yeah, just whatever Heath has left over, I just take it. You know?
And he's referring, of course, to Heath Garrett, who is a Republican strategist, has worked with Johnny Isaacson for many years, and he, too, has got a government relations firm called, remind us, your firm?
Garrett McNatt Hennessy and Carpenter 360.
Oh, that's too many names. Melina Easters, founder and director of the Georgia Win List, an organization which is all about recruiting Democratic women, pro-choice women, to run for office across Georgia and beyond. Yes, Melina?
Just Georgia for now, but thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here today. And Sam Whitehead, Georgia Public Broadcasting radio reporter, is here today. Sam, it's great to have you in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bill.
So we've all come together today because this really is a historic day, Jim Galloway. You know, your colleague Ernie Suggs over the weekend wrote a piece.
Yeah, a fantastic piece.
It was phenomenal. And one of the things that was so powerful about it was he pointed out that August 28th has some real resonance. Not only is it the day that Dr. King in 1963 gave the I Have a Dream speech, it is the day, sadly, in 1955, I think, that Emmett Till
was murdered,
was lynched, mm-hmm. but it's also the day that Barack Obama accepted the Democratic nomination to become the first African-American major party candidate for president. What remarkable resonances, Jim.
I would add today.
Well, of course.
I mean,
that's the culmination.
and the thing is, I don't, you know, a lot of this is just pure coincidence. I don't think Nathan Deal, when he scheduled this ceremony, was thinking about the I Have a Dream anniversary, but I don't think he was thinking about any of the others, certainly.
I guess that's right. And Jim, you Theron, and you, Sam, were all at the unveiling at 10 o'clock this morning. And Melita, you and I watched it on the GPB stream, live stream of the event. And Heath, I know you were coming back from Athens, so you probably didn't get to watch it unfold, which is why it's good you're here, because you can hear all the sound that we gathered from the event.
I'm looking forward to it.
So I want to go around real quick. Before we play sound, this is a blank check. What does today mean? Why don't we start? Theron, why don't you start?
You know, I think today Georgians came together, and then we got to give Governor Deal a tremendous amount of credit. I mean, he was the governor who fought so hard to make sure that the funding was there, to make sure that this statue was built. And more importantly, I mean, he was the administration that got it done. But Bill, I'll tell you this. I was down there to see Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, women, LGBTQ community, working class Georgians, all come together today to honor this great civil rights hero, this native Georgian, were just remarkable. And then lastly, the timing of it. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were on this show and having a very interesting conversation about race and how we move forward. And I think today was a first step of many towards racial healing, and I'm just happy to be a Georgian.
Who wants to jump in? I'm really, you should all get a chance at this. Heath?
You know, Bill, I'm a part of the post-desegregation generation of Georgians, right? I'm a part of that under 50 crowd who grew up post desegregation in the Deep South. And so to me, I'm proud as a Georgian. And as I listen to the I Have a Dream speech, which I do a couple different times a year, I usually teach a Sunday school class in our church around the speech itself and ask people to read the text and listen to it, watch it on YouTube, and then I usually do it on the 28th. As I was doing that again this morning, it dawned on me that this would not have happened in 1963 when that speech, in the 1963 Georgia, in which time that the speech was given. And I think that Martin Luther King would have been proud of his state. For, again, we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go. Nobody's talking about it. And I do think that the timing, you know, immediately post Charlottesville, and that wasn't on the radar when we got down to it. But today's a great day for the state of Georgia.
I agree that it's a great day for the state of Georgia. I was thinking as I watched the broadcast of the ceremony, when Martin Luther King was assassinated and his funeral procession passed by the state capitol. Lester Maddox was our governor. He cordoned himself off in his office, protected by Georgia State Patrolmen, and put snipers on the roof. And I just thought about how far we've come to go past Lester Maddox to a day when a Republican governor stood shoulder to shoulder with the heroes of the Civil Rights Movement to unveil a statue of Martin Luther King, which was so lovingly crafted, placed so that it looks towards the dawn, as one of the speeches said, towards the neighborhood where King grew up, towards the church where he preached. And there were just so many lovely synchronicities about the thought and planning that went into today's ceremony.
Yeah, Sam and Jim, we don't want to be, there was no question that this was an extraordinary day. We've never had, this is certainly, I believe, the first statue of an African-American leader that's been unveiled. There are tributes to Dr. King others inside the building.
Yes, and it's hard to describe it, but it's a work of art on the Capitol grounds that's in honor of the 33 black lawmakers who were ousted from the General Assembly at the end of Reconstruction. But yeah, this is the first statue for an individual African American,
and I think it's the first statue for someone who did not serve in the legislature, and elected officials. So that's again historic moment for us.
Sam, what was it? You were out and about in the crowd, I know. Mm-hmm. What was it feeling like there?
Yeah, a lot of the folks I talked to focused on the younger generations, people younger than myself. I talked to a pair of women. They were both great grandmothers, and they were talking about what this means to them, where their grandchildren now live in this world, where someone like Martin Luther King is going to be memorialized for these future generations to come. And I can't remember who said it today speaking, but the statue is going to be there after all of us are gone.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of the thing that resonated with the folks I spoke with.
There were some wonderful words spoken today. Jim, I want to start, if we can, with Bernice King, of course, daughter.
Yeah, she was the one who went closest to the edge of what's supposed to be
it's a kumbaya day.
This was a kumbaya day, and everybody was trying to play very, very politely and very nicely, and she walked it to the edge, I think, very properly, I think.
All right, well, with that in mind, let's listen to a couple things that Bernice King said as we march through some of this best sound from the speeches today. Here's Dr. King's daughter, the Reverend Bernice King.
When my dad made that challenging and inspiring speech, he provided a sense of hope for a nation that was in turmoil. And today, on the same day, although he is not physically present with us, he is present in spirit and through the symbol of this statue. And this statue being unveiled today, I believe also provides a sense of hope to a nation that is in turmoil once again.
All right, a nation that's in turmoil once again, a sense of hope.
And she mentioned the Confederate issue. She brought up Charlottesville.
Yep, yep. So bringing a dose of reality to this thing. Theron, Can we overstate today, because we're all feeling, I think, emotional. I certainly was watching the unveiling. Can we overstate this sense of unity? And is Jim right that perhaps, he didn't say it quite like this, Bernice King did bring us back to reality and point out this country is not feeling the kind of coming together that today was all about here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, and if you look at her remarks, even pre-Charlottesville and especially after, I mean, she got together with a group of pastors in Atlanta and really called for a racial healing to happen. I think that her remarks today probably changed 3 or 4 times because, as Jim just pointed out, and you point out, Bill, I mean, you look at all the people who came before her. I mean, it was a very less unite. It was some people denouncing the white supremacists and the nationalist movements, particularly Speaker Ralston. But the person that I had a chance to talk to after the speech and after the ceremony today is a guy who I failed to mention, and that is the dean of the House, Calvin Sabari.
Oh, absolutely.
Who really was the guy who made this happen?
This
wasn't
a big day for him. And I asked him that question. I said, Mr. Chairman, because, you know, he's the chairman emeritus, I said, where do we go from here? I said, what do we do? I said, as a young African-American male who has a voice in this state, what can I do more of? And what he said was, he said, we've got to all return to this gold dome, and he pointed behind him, and make sure that our policies match our remarks and our rhetoric today. And I think what he was saying is that I hope that the Democrats and Republicans who were there today speaking unity, when the session starts in January, when we have these very divisive racial issues, that their rhetoric and their remarks will match their actions in January.
Well, you know, it's the one thing I would mention is Governor Nathan Deal. I mean, he does get the credit for all this. I mean, he started this in January 2014 with an address at Ebenezer Baptist Church. Said this is something we need to do. He came up with the last bit of cash that was needed to push it all over. Quite frankly, I expected him to say a little bit to make more of draw more of a connection between the statue that we were putting up and the situation in the U.S. at large. He chose not to. He let Bernice King do that, and in a way, I think that was probably the more appropriate thing to do. Our friend Greg Bluestein asked him about Bernice's remarks after that, and the governor said, let's wait till tomorrow. We'll talk about that.
Well,
tomorrow.
You know what was I will tell you, watching this on the feed on TV, I was fascinated by the fact that Mrs. Deal, Sandra Deal, first of all, it seemed clear to me, you know, the governor was he was a governor today. He was relatively stoic in the way he watched all this unfold. Mrs. Deal really seemed enthusiastic about the entire event. And I was interested in the fact that she didn't hesitate for a second to applaud. She gave a lot of applause to Bernice.
Really?
King.
Oh,
she did.
I wish I'd seen that.
Yeah. She was very animated.
Let's listen to one more comment by Bernice King, because this is the comment that from her point of view, tells us how far we've come.
49 years ago, when my father was assassinated, he was one of the most hated men in America. Today, he is one of the most loved men in the world. And as we gather here today, I can't help but think about the person that I believe was responsible, along with the support of her family and friends, with ensuring that this nation would remember and institutionalize the legacy of this great man. And so I stand here today in honor as well of my mother, Mrs. Coretta Scott King.
Well, it's certainly true, everybody, that Coretta insisted that Dr. King's legacy not be in any way trampled upon or left behind. So it was really pretty fitting, Melita, that she would mention her mother today.
Absolutely. And it was also fitting that she would mention her mother, because women were, in many ways, the backbones of the movement. Rosa Parks is the person who refused to sit down on the bus. Women died as martyrs to the movement, both white and black. And women were the ones who did a lot of the logistical work and feeding the crowds and taking care of people and letting the men be in the spotlight. But the women of the movement, I hear Edna Jackson of Savannah, the mayor there, was a young teenager during the movement, and she talks about how the women kept everybody in line and made sure that the college students dressed right and towed the line and behaved properly. So I think it was great that on this day, the women of the movement were recognized via her recognition of Coretta Scott King.
Okay, Sam, you were out there talking to a variety of people in the crowd. And as we discussed this day, and as Bernice King kind of brought us to the edge of the conversation about putting this statue in the context of what's happening in the country at large, and the ongoing, renewed, endless controversy about Confederate memorials, you talked to Representative Billy Mitchell, out there in Stone Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I bumped into him before the event, and it was striking to hear the folks speaking from the podium not really go into the current events. I don't know if anyone really mentioned Charlottesville outright, but it was all the people that I talked to in the audience wanted to talk about. The events of the last few weeks were very present there today. I ran into Billy Mitchell, who, as you said, represents a district that includes Stone Mountain. And I asked him kind of about this conversation. I know it was just a week or so ago that Stacey Abrams has called for making some kind of large-scale alteration to Stone Mountain and the Confederate memorial there. And this is what Billy Mitchell had to say about that idea.
My opinion is that we need to add some context by adding all history to it. Taking down would not only be a monumental expense, but the kind of feelings that would put pro and con would probably not be good for certainly Georgia and this nation.
Well, you know, Michael Thurman was also in the crowd. He's the DeKalb County CEO, who is now the only African-American member of the Stone Mountain Memorial Association, which governs Stone Mountain Park.
Yeah, and Representative Mitchell's take was kind of it's one that's out there. I mean, the Atlanta History Center has this project they launched a few years ago to add context to Confederate memorials. And I actually saw Sheffield Hale, the CEO of the History Center, walking away from the event. That's Mitchell's take. It's not something we need to take down, but rather add more information.
Well, Heath and Theron, the remarks by Billy Mitchell do remind me, at least, that as much as we'd like to put all this behind us, this issue is now going to play out, as we've said on the show on a number of occasions, in the Georgia governor's, the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia between Evans and Abrams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was an article in the AJC this weekend talking about folks that are concerned. But, you know, and I think Melita would back me up on this, is that I've said on the show many, many times that we have two qualified women who are running for higher office. Now, it's unfortunate that one is on one side of this issue who wants to sandblast Stone Mountain, and the other, Stacey, is more measured, a little bit more like, hey, kind of along with Billy Mitchell. I would say this. I hate, you know, this is, you know, we have to be realistic with ourselves. There's so much enthusiasm. There's so much passion on both sides of this issue that I just think it's not going to go away. And so I believe that it will play in the Republican primary as well, but it's definitely going to be a central argument in the Democratic
primary. Think it will? Heath, that's interesting that Theron thinks it's going to overlap into the Republican race.
I absolutely agree. I do think it could overlap into the race. More importantly, it's going to be in the legislative session before us in January, which will impact the Republican primary and the Democratic primary. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but if you go back, Stone Mountain is mentioned in the I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah.
So the history of this and its significance in this debate is more than just monumental and symbolic, right? Clearly for Martin Luther King, it was a location that mattered to the cause, and it's something that's going to be debated. And I do think we as a city and as a state have always found ways to work across the racial divide for the most part, not all the time, and solve these issues. But I think it's going to be dumped in everybody's lap. And the question becomes, will somebody in the Republican primary decide that they're going to try to kind of go backwards in time and run farther to the right and grab some of this thinking, I think mistakenly so, that there's a larger constituency than there may be, particularly statewide?
You've already got Michael Williams, Republican candidate for governor of from Cumming, who's doing some fundraising off of Stacey Abrams' remarks. So I would anticipate that that's going to come. What I think you're probably going to see in the legislature this year really is in the flag, when Rory Barnes took down the 56 flag,
yeah,
there was a deal cut that gave just a great deal of protection to Confederate monuments across the state of Georgia. And it now forbids local governments, cities and counties, from touching those monuments. And I think that's where you're going to see probably the most action.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a bill introduced to overturn that previous legislation.
And on the Republican side, it's going to be an interesting one because it's about, you will have the heritage folks on one side, but you also have the local control people on the other side.
Well, and then you've got people like Earl Earhart from Cobb County, who just wants to call everybody a snowflake and stir people up.
Well, I do think it's interesting that the city of Kennesaw,
right,
which used to be viewed nationally as someone who'd be otherwise protecting this, has said, we want more local control.
Right.
We can't deal with this local monument that they want to deal with, and they actually want to take the Confederate flag down.
And their state representative, Ed Setzler, I think his territory includes the city of Kennesaw, or at least parts of it. He says he's open to that.
All right, I got to get a break in, but when we come back, I want to continue this conversation because we have a group of smart thinkers in the studio, as we always do, but you're a great group to talk about all of these issues, and especially on this historic day in Georgia. So when we come back, we're going to hear a little bit more from what people were saying on the stage and also in the crowd today. But let's take a break right now. We'll be back with more Political Rewind in a moment.
Now's your chance to win a beach getaway for two and support GPB at the same time. Your contribution at gpb.org will give our fall fund drive a strong start. You'll also enter to win a St. Simons Island getaway for two at the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort, including a three-night oceanfront stay, meals, and golf. No contributions required to enter the drawing, but because you listen, we are counting on your support. That's gpb.org, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Sam Whitehead, Melita Easters, Heath Garrett, Theron Johnson, Jim Galloway. We've got a packed house today. I want to play a sound clip from Speaker of the House David Ralston. David Ralston, it's easy. Well, I shouldn't even say it that way. Ralston is a thoughtful and really articulate guy. He really has a sort of a sense of poetry in his heart, I think, when we hear him often. Here's one of the things he said in his remarks today.
This day took much too long to get here. Too many yesterdays have slipped away from us, yesterdays that we can never reclaim or change. But from those days, we can grow and learn. On the evening of April 4th, 1968, I remember doing my homework in my bedroom at home in LJ, Georgia, listening to the transistor radio when the news bulletin broke that Georgia's native son, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., had been assassinated in Memphis. While Dr. King's life was tragically and unjustly cut short, his legacy stands as a testament to the responsibility entrusted to us by God. We have the responsibility and the duty to seek equality and justice.
That's Speaker David Ralston. And before we turn it over to the panel to talk about it, Governor Deal had a similar line in his remarks.
Today, we are celebrating the life of a native Georgian who changed our nation through his nonviolence and his devotion to love, not hate. Exactly 54 years ago today, Dr. Martin Luther King delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. During these intervening years, much progress has been made toward the realization of Dr. King's dream, but much yet remains. Our actions here today symbolized the evolved mindset of our state as we continue to reconcile our history and our hearts.
I think that, Melita, Jim pointed out earlier that nobody really talked Charlottesville. Bernice King came close, and the governor didn't. But I think he may have done everyone a favor by not choosing to frame today in that context.
Well, the evolved mindset of our state, you know, during the civil rights movement.
It was an odd.
During the civil rights movement, Atlanta prided itself on being the city too busy to hate, even if that was a phrase Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle couldn't quite make himself say.
Yes, but he's savvy enough to have stopped and started over for the soundbite.
He did. But Atlanta did not have the kinds of violence in the streets that other cities had. Atlantans came to the table and worked things out to desegregate many things before the other southern cities did. And so it's interesting to me, though, in the erection of this statue, we've made a great milestone, but there's still a lot to do. Birmingham is a little bit ahead of us because in Birmingham you have Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative actually proposing a museum for the 4,000 people who were lynched in the 12 southern states to make a memory of them. And so that might be another way that Atlanta and Georgia can be a part of the healing that needs to take place.
Just a deep, dark secret here. House Speaker David Ralston and Melita Easters and myself, I think, are pretty much the same age, 62 or 63.
Yes, we are.
and there is, I think, what you heard in what Ralston said and with the allusion that Dela made to the evolved mindset, is there was a tone here today on the part of white Georgians to try to kind of set things right, to try to undo the disrespect that was actually shown King after his assassination in Atlanta when you had the state patrol line the Capitol so no one in that mule train that carried the casket could stop and rest on that ground.
Right. Well, we can go back even before that to the response in Atlanta when Dr. King won the Nobel Peace Prize, and city leaders here refused to honor him with a dinner until the Coca-Cola company essentially stepped in and said, if this isn't a city that will honor Dr. King, then maybe Coca-Cola should find another city to make its corporate headquarters.
And that was on the minds of some of the people that I spoke with, that this idea of kind of righting past wrongs, the one woman who said that to me said, of course, this doesn't make up for those wrongs in the past, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and Jim just hit on something that was very emotional for me, because seeing those white, black, and Hispanic, and I think I even saw Asian state patrol or state troopers out there today standing alone. I mean, for all of us who were there, I mean, they were, you know, represented. But I will tell you, in just listening to Melita and Jim and even you, Bill, just talk about these historic times, I mean, as an African-American male, just sitting here and being able to have this discussion, I am first to say that we have come a long way. But however, even though looking at what Dr. King's family endured at a time when this man was assassinated, and know that it took this long for us to just have a statue of him at the state capitol, let's not fool ourselves. One of the reasons it took so long is because we had legislators there for a very long time who refused to vote on something to this magnitude.
And we still do.
And so it goes back to what Chairman Smyre said. is that if these legislators that was well represented there today, I mean, you have Republicans, Democrats, everyone there, but when they go back to that Gold Dome and when the session starts and these divisive, discriminatory issues come up, I just really hope that people will listen to the speaker and will listen to the governor and even lieutenant governor and follow some of that those words into action.
All right. I am so glad that you teed up what I'd like to play next. Thank you for that. And Melita, you'll relate to this because you and you worked with Roy Barnes when he was governor of Georgia. You were one of his advisors. Jim Galloway and I interviewed Governor Barnes. It's been a couple years now to do the history of how he changed the state flag. And we're going to replay that show on Friday of this week because it's so timely again. But he did it in 2001. And he gave, and Heath, you'll remember this, a speech, one of the greatest speeches I think I'll ever hear at the state legislature when he came before the House and said, here's why I want to change the flag. Friday you'll hear more of this speech. But at one point he talks about, and this relates to what Theron said, when he was a young legislator from Cobb County, from out in
Mableton.
He voted against the MLK holiday. Mm-hmm. And here's just a little of how he put that into his speech about why it was urgent for legislators to change the flag.
There is not a day that goes by that I do not regret that vote. Fortunately, there were enough leaders in this General Assembly then with the wisdom and the fortitude that I lacked as a young legislator. Don't make my mistake. When the dust settles and controversy fades, and I promise you, it will rapidly, will history record you as just another politician or as a person of conscience? Make no mistake, just as with me and a vote 20 years ago, history will make a judgment. Using race to win leaves ashes in the mouths of the victors.
Ooh, you don't hear that.
No. Very well.
I would remember that was 16 years ago. And I would also remind this group that we did have one legislator currently serving in the Capitol who refused, who asked that his name not be applied, added to the statue,
to the statue,
the marker, because he did not think King belonged there.
Yeah.
Who was that?
That was Tommy Benn.
Yeah. Yeah. Melita, that was an important, you know, it, certainly Roy Barnes, your former colleague, your boss, I guess, at the Capitol, understood what Theron's talking about. You know, the legislature still has to deal with issues like this all these years, 16 years later.
And Roy wrote a very interesting column last week about Charlottesville that he posted on his Facebook page, which is something for him he rarely does. And it was very well written, as one might expect from Roy. You know, I think the tie to Coca-Cola that you all mentioned is also very interesting, because when King was assassinated, Robert Woodruff, the CEO of Coca-Cola, was in the office of President Johnson just by happenstance,
along with Mayor Hart.
No, with Carl Sanders.
That's right, Carl Sanders.
And they were there when the future president of CNN, Tom Johnson, was a young intern and yanked the UPI story off. But Coca-Cola then said they would pay for anything to make it peaceful, the funeral peaceful. And so it's interesting that Coca-Cola was one of the major donors for this statue.
Tom Johnson has told that story on Two-Way Street, as a matter of fact, so I'm glad you remembered it. Sam, I'm curious. I'm looking around the studio. I think you're the youngest person in the studio. And you're a fairly recent transplant to Georgia.
I grew up here.
Oh, of course you did. You grew up in Gwinnett County.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but you were gone,
yeah,
and you came back.
Yes, to the great white north.
See, that's the point. I'm so old, I forget things like that. You don't.
Yeah, and that is kind of where these monuments, if you know, we've been talking a lot about Stone Mountain, you know, when I even went to school here in Atlanta, or when I would travel, you know, I lived in upstate New York for a number of years. It's kind of hard to explain Stone Mountain to people, especially if you have no understanding of just kind of the climate of a city like Atlanta, a state like Georgia. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's kind of what I was thinking today is now the next time I, you know, introduce myself to someone and they have probably heard about Stone Mountain in the context of what's happened in the last few weeks nationally, I can say, yes, we have Stone Mountain. That's in my home state. That's in my backyard. But we also now have taken this additional step. And it gets back to this idea of this these kind of monuments always being in conversation with each other. And that's something that I actually spoke with the sculptor of the King statue about.
Martin Daw is his name, correct? And, of course, he took over from the first man who was commissioned to do the piece when he was tragically killed in a motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. Why don't we listen to what Martin Daw said to you?
To have so many people have such strong opinions about what's happening with the Confederate memorials, this adds another side to it. It adds another possibility to it. So I think the conversation can expand. You know, Dr. King's going to be talking to General Gordon, do you know? So maybe that can help expand the conversation in the United States. So I just feel fortunate that the timing happened that way.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's just to clarify, when he says General Gordon, that is John Brown Gordon, prominently displayed on the Capitol grounds, Confederate general known to be head of the KKK.
Okay, so Theron, Sam, and Jim, you were all there when the unveiling took place. Melita, you and I watched it. Let's talk about aesthetics. We're not art critics, but I will tell you, first of all, somebody describe what the pose is for those who haven't seen it. Who's the best at that?
He's in mid-stride, and I've seen the photo that it's based on.
Wearing a business suit.
Walking into or out of a courthouse.
Carrying a briefcase. Or a law book. A law book?
Or a file folder, maybe some papers.
Okay.
And the one thing, and quite frankly, it's missing from the statue, and I kind of wish that it at least he had had it in his other hand, is the fedora that he always wore.
He had
the fedora on, of course. You know, after the mid '60s, we don't wear hats anymore. So, it's life size. It's maybe up on a 3 foot high podium with the big letters MLK emblazoned, so you can see it from the street very well. I like it. It's a different colored bronze than we have elsewhere on the grounds.
It's lighter,
and it's close to his skin color, and yeah. I think that was probably intentional.
Theron Heath, I think it's beautifully done, and it's the likeness is better than any other likeness I personally have seen in statuary of Dr. King. I found it as a guy who grew up in Chicago and moved down here in 1983 and got to meet all of those great men and women who surrounded Dr. King, never him. I just found it deeply moving because it reminded me, yes, this is where he is from. That statue reminds me of that.
And it was synonymous in everyone's remarks today. I mean, they reminded a lot of people who are born and raised here, like myself, but folks who are transient to this city, that, you know, this is the birthplace of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But, you know, the one thing that stood out for me when they actually unveiled the statue was the look on the King family's face. I mean, they were very focused on, as Jim pointed out, does it really look like him? And then the thing that was so striking was the color of the bronze. I mean, it was just so eloquently, and it was just so bright. I mean, and it was like when they unveiled it, because it was very cloudy outside through the whole entire ceremony. I mean, it was cloudy. You would look
nice
up.
Nice and cool.
Nice and cool, and a nice little summer breeze. And so, again, I mean, it was just well done, and I think that everyone who worked on it deserve a lot of credit for it.
Heath?
No, I think it's a great day in history. You know, my children have grown up knowing that Martin Luther King was one of, if not the greatest Georgian, who took and changed the world, right? You can talk about Robert Woodruff and Coca-Cola. You can talk about President Carter. But, you know, there are five speeches out there that almost everybody in the United States of America and most people around the world would say, oh, I know about the Gettysburg Address. They know about this speech. And I think to have a statue here to be commemorated in Washington, D.C., and what I like most about it is the purity of this act. Because there was no threat of economic development or boycott or anything else. This was just a pure, you know, Republican leadership, Democratic leadership, white African-American coming together and doing this without any of this external pressure. So you can't question kind of the motives of it all. And so I like the purity of that, too, that this didn't happen post-Charlottesville. This happened pre-Charlottesville. This didn't happen with threat of a boycott. It happened because people really are trying to make right out of wrong and miss those yesterdays.
I think you also have to give a lot of credit to the artist because he truly worked so hard to embody the spiritual nature of Dr. King's dream in the work he did. And to know that he was not the first choice the commission made and that he stepped into the shoes of another artist who had passed away and to put heart and soul into making a monument that truly will stand the test of time and to artistically create a vision of Dr. King that is so much like the photographs. Because there are a lot of statues of Dr. King out there which do not do him justice. And I think the test of time will show that this one does.
Well, I thank you all for weighing in on that. He is, I believe, the photograph that Daw worked from is King emerging from Birmingham jail or heading to court. It's around the time he was placed in Birmingham jail, where he wrote the remarkable letter from Birmingham jail, right? And so he's very purposeful in this pose.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, just to speak about the aesthetics of the monument itself. There's this slight suggestion of movement, which I think is very telling, because so much of the conversation today was about the present and about the future. You know, we are memorializing a man who died, you know, decades ago, but this is still work that's being done today. And I think the kind of slight suggestion of movement in the statue gets that. I also like what Jim said about the fedora, because when you see that picture, especially for someone like me who has learned about Martin Luther King through history books and history class, it's humanizing. You know, people like him, who we hold up as, you know, some of the greatest people to have come out of our state, wore fedoras, and there's something about that I think is really valuable.
The other thing I would add, Bill, is that yes, this is the only statue of an African American figure on the state capitol, but it also, if I'm not mistaken, it is now the youngest representation.
Oh.
I mean, King was how old when he was shot?
30. 30s.
Mid-30s, yeah. About your age there. Yeah. I mean, and I don't think there is anyone younger represented on that Capitol lawn.
We do have to take another break and just have a few minutes when we come back. We're talking today about what is a truly historic day in Georgia. And I hope all of you out there listening agree with us that it's been worth spending as much time as we are on this because, you know, we've talked about President Trump over and over again. He had a very big weekend Friday night. We know that even as Hurricane Harvey was bearing down on the coast of Texas, he took some actions that were once again aimed directly at his base, that once again have caused enormous controversy. And you know what? Today, there's plenty of time to talk about a lot of that. Today, it seems like if healing is the word of the day at the state capitol, then I hope you understand we want to use today's show to do the same thing. So you're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, our 30th anniversary continues with more interviews from 30 years ago. Elia Kazan tells us about directing Marlon Brando in On the Waterfront, Kirk Douglas on directing Spartacus and hiring blacklisted screenwriter Dalton Trumbo to write the script, and Sidney Lumet talks about working with Al Pacino on Serpico and Dog Day Afternoon. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 right here on your GPB station.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Theron Johnson, Heath Garrett, Melita Easters, Sam Whitehead are all in the studio to talk about this historic day at the state capitol, the unveiling of the MLK statue. Sam, let's turn to another one of the sound bites. You actually, you talked to, well, let's listen. You talked to a Bishop Reginald Jackson.
Yeah. And
why did you talk to him?
I bumped into him. as often happens, he was sitting down and looked like he wanted to talk. So it turns out he is actually the bishop for the state of Georgia for the AME churches. Thought of the unveiling of the statue today in the context of what's been happening in the last few weeks. Like I said, a lot of the people I spoke to, I didn't even have to ask them about Charlottesville and Confederate monuments. It was in the air.
Let's listen.
Whatever they want to say about Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and all of them, their effort was to destroy the country and to start a new country. Dr. King, in the midst of being discriminated against racism, he sought to make the country greater. And I think he did, in fact, make this country greater than it would have been without him.
So the reason I thought that was worth playing, Jim Galloway, is that is the debate. There it is, right there. The debate between what to do with Confederate statues at a time when we're putting one up for Dr. King.
And it'll be interesting just to see how much play he gets outside outside Georgia, because this was unusual. You had, I think you had in Alabama, you had a big frou-frou over some Sons of Confederate veterans putting up a new monument, a new marker, simply a marker to Confederate veterans. But here, you know, we're putting up a statue to a 1960s, not 1860s, a 1960s figure.
All right. Melita, we're getting down toward the end of the show. So I want to give each of you, and I'll start with you, an opportunity again on this day to tell us what does it all mean to you today and what's your hope that it leads to?
Well, my hope would be that we look forward to more healing and to finding those things which bring us together rather than those things which divide us and bring us apart, and that we remember that the civil rights movement was built on nonviolence, because the horrors that we saw in Charlottesville need not to happen again.
Heath?
You know, I think you have to hearken back to the great texts. And the great text of this speech, if you think about post-Charlottesville, Martin Luther King says that with the faith that he had in 63, we had to be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With the same faith that he had in 63, we will be able to transform discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. I think acts like this, no matter how small and no matter how much they're covered, over and over and over again every day are what are going to change the dialogue for Theron's generation and for my children. And I just think that this is just one small but very positive step in the right direction.
It's renewed my commitment to really want to, as Melita just pointed out, remind people that this was a movement that was solely based on nonviolence. And what we saw a couple weeks ago was one race, the white race predominantly, fighting against one another for something that they believed in, whether it was for or against whatever was being displayed in Charlottesville. And the second feeling I have, Bill, is again, as an African-American male who is constantly being criticized and being polarized and profiled in this country, is to realize that Dr. King raised the bar. He held everyone to a high standard with his excellence and how he prepared and the discipline that he displayed through this movement. I really hope that my race, the African-American race, understands that, yes, we have come a long way, but there's so much more that we
need
to do.
Well, you know what? You said something really interesting on our show on the week after, right after Charlottesville took place. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talk about how what would black families say to one another about what happened and, seeing the white supremacists out there. But you said, I'd like to be able to hear the conversations that are going on in white families. And I suspect you could make the same comment about today and the unveiling of this sculpture. And what would those conversations in your head be?
Yeah, I would love to sit in a living room in Cobb County or in Kennesaw, or even next to Stone Mountain, to see what a middle-class white couple, same-sex or opposite-sex, heterosexual couple, or LGBT couple, what do they sit down and tell their white children today about what just happened? And I think that that's what's missing right now in America, because we were talking about the Procter Gamble commercial where it showed African-American families. And I said on the show, now I want to see, will there be a commercial very similar to show what's happening in these white living rooms? And so I think what we saw today is those conversations now are being had, and I think more of them to come, because as we try to unite this country, unite this state, there are still people out there that want to divide us. And I think that it's left up to particularly white Americans to have those very uncomfortable and hard conversations with our children.
Sam, quick one from you.
Yeah, I just, you know, the thing that's going to stick in my mind is just the joy that I saw on people's faces that this was actually finally happening.
Jim, you and I have covered politics in this state for a really long time, and there are days that stick out, moments that stick out in both of our memories, I know. Is this one of them?
Oh, this is one of them. This is what struck me about what happened today is that it didn't have the feel of a one and off. This was not a we've done this and now we're done. This was an example that Governor Deal and the members of the legislature were offering. You share your history, you share your geography. And I think we're going to see that replayed over where, and I would venture to say that the next place you see that happen is going to be over at Stone Mountain.
I thought one quick thing from me. The evening the news came across that Dr. King had been assassinated. I was a college student, and I was on the south side of Chicago visiting a friend in an African-American neighborhood. And the family said to me, this was a middle-class family surrounded by lower-income African-American community. And they said to me, you better get out of here now. And I think back to that today and realize that really was, I was frightened, and I did want to get out. And I think today, I guess, I'm not going to say this artfully. Today, I'd like to think that maybe I could have stayed there and maybe begun talking about how we were all affected in that neighborhood that night by the death of Dr. King. It wasn't possible then. I hope that we can do that today. So with that, we are completely out of time. Melita Easters, Sam Whitehead, Heath Garrett, Theron Johnson, Jim Galloway, thank you so much for this conversation. We will be back Wednesday with more Political Rewind at 2 o'clock. In the meantime, let's listen to one more Movement song as we say goodbye.
We shall overcome one day. We shall overcome. One day, we shall.